All right, welcome to Talk Jiu-Jitsu with host Uki Mike, Joey Bresky, and me, Jordan Pressinger from Jordan Teaches Jiu-Jitsu. Today we have a great episode for you guys, and we're going to start first with there is allegations of ADCC bribing somebody to lose a match back in the day. I think it was 2001 or 2000 or so, and he didn't fight. And like he was so offended by the offer to throw the match that he just didn't compete. They offered him $65,000 to lose to a guy who apparently represented ADCC. I don't really understand that fully. But yeah, he said no. And then they gave him $10,000 to make it right, I guess. And then he didn't compete. Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of interesting. Like $65,000 probably isn't worth it to throw the match. But at the same time, I wouldn't be so offended where I wouldn't compete still. Like, what do you think about that, Joey?
If the prize for winning is $10,000, or I can throw the match for $65,000, I'm no mathematician, but I'm saying I think I know what I might pick here. You know, obviously, like integrity is important and all that, but at the same time, like I got bills to pay. I've lost matches for free. Hell, I'll lose one for $65,000, no problem.
Yeah, I think it's tough though, like to I don't know, swallow your pride, I guess, and accept the money. Like he had a good chance of winning because I think he won the year before that. I know he won his division at some point. It must have been the year before that. And apparently he had a really boring style. He's just like this big sumo Greco guy from South Africa. And I mean, I don't really blame them for not wanting him to win if he's just kind of using his weight and kind of just boring. But you can't do that. I mean, it just takes away the legitimacy of the sport itself, and super lame.
But do you think it was because they didn't want Brazilian jiu-jitsu to look bad if it was beaten by sumo?
Well, I don't think ADCC was ever about showcasing Brazilian jiu-jitsu itself. It's more just like grappling. Right, Joey?
As far as I know, yeah. I mean, I think if I had to guess, honestly, it's probably either because they wanted to highlight the other guy and make him some sort of like star or something, or honestly, like most fight fixing comes down to betting.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't know you could bet on ADCC.
Oh, I'm sure you can. I'm sure you find it. I know the last one, at least in America, they had, or in Canada, they had betting lines too. So it's, we should do that actually this year for ADCC. We should do like a little betting preview show, see how our picks hold up.
Yeah, that would be cool. We could even do, what's it called? Like fantasy, not fantasy football, because it's not football, but fantasy, I don't know.
Fantasy grappling.
Yeah,
I think it'd be grappling. Fun.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Interesting. We should do something like that.
And there was another case of match fixing. I think like it was Robert Drysdale and Andre Galvao.
Allegedly. These are only rumors and allegations.
I'm pretty sure what went down was Andre threw the match with Robert Drysdale, and Robert was the winner. And it wasn't in the finals. I think it was the semifinals. I think the reason was because they were friends and training partners, and they wanted one of them to go into the match fresh against their opponent. But I think that's what happened. Do you remember exactly what went down there, Joey?
Yeah, I think you're pretty right. I think they were teammates who met in the semifinals, and I believe this was for the absolute, and the winner was going to fight Marcelo, I want to say. And allegedly, they just agreed to have like a super fake match so that one guy could go in super fresh. I believe that's why ADCC changed their policy. So now teammates meet in the quarterfinals, not the semifinals. So you can't do that and send someone in fresh because, I mean, from just a tactical standpoint, if you wanted your team to win, like let's say you and your teammate are, let's say maybe like equally skilled and you meet in the semifinals, it doesn't make sense to tire each other out, exhaust each other, have this like 20-minute match where also because they're your teammate, you're probably going to show a lot of holes in the other person's games. You know what things work against each other. It wouldn't make sense to show that and then have the other guy now try and compete. It would make a lot of sense financially for you guys to go, hey, listen, who do we think has the better chance of beating the guy in the finals? Cool. You're going to go on and we split the cash.
Exactly. There's definitely strategy to that. And but it's funny because the Kaur brothers, they face each other in the semifinals of the trials, and you know, and they're brothers, and they still went for it. But you see all the time like people closing out divisions because they don't want to compete against their teammate or whatever, so they closed it out. They both got the gold medal, but it makes it super boring for the fans that want to see these cool matches. So I've never been a fan of closeouts. Again, the Core brothers, they were like, screw it, let's do it, which I think is more in line with the spirit of competition, even though it is obviously like advantageous to not tire yourself out.
Yeah, I mean, I hate closeouts like as a spectator. As a coach, I understand. Like if I have two athletes who don't want to fight, I'm never going to force them to fight. If one wants to walk over and win the other. Like that, I tell my athletes, like if you guys are in the same bracket, I don't care what you guys decide to do, whether you want to fight each other, whether you don't want to fight each other. All I care is that you both agree on the outcome of whatever you decide. So if one guy wants to fight and the other doesn't, well then if you don't want to fight and the other guy does, you let him through. Like you don't get to be like, I don't want to fight, but I want to go through. Like, not how it works. You guys got to agree.
Yeah, I think one issue there is that the one of them might feel pressured to say yes to the fight or to the match because they don't want to look like a wuss. So like I kind of do it on a case by case basis where if I can feel or like sense a little bit of hesitation from someone, or I just feel like it's not going to be a good idea if they compete, then I'll be like, yeah, just like do rock, paper, scissors or whatever. But if I feel like they're going to be just fine afterwards and they both want to do it, then it's good to go.
Yeah. I mean, we've only had it. Oh, sorry, Mike. We've only had it come up once. So it wasn't a big deal.
I was just going to ask if you ever had it come up.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. We haven't had it often. Sorry. Go ahead.
There are times when like, there's a tactical aspect to it. So especially like, some of these tournaments like Grappling Industries or things where it's around robin style, it can actually make a big difference for like team points and athlete placing depending on who wins one. So like, in a single elimination bracket, obviously it's different. You either win or you lose, and that's just how it is. But in these round robin things, like there are scenarios where if one of your athletes, athlete A beats athlete B, then your guys will get gold, silver. But if athlete B beats athlete A, you guys end up with silver, bronze, and some other guy gets gold just because of the way the round robin dynamics can work. So there are times like that when it's like, hey guys, maybe we should work together here to get the outcome we want as a team rather than, you know, some random guy from another team getting a gold because you guys couldn't work. And if that kind of a scenario would ever come up where I'm like, hey, you guys are going to get first and second, I don't really care. Don't do the match. I just want you guys to get the medals. If you really want to have the fight and see who earned it, bring both your medals into the gym on Monday and we can do a 6-minute match and whoever wins can have the gold one.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think, like, just say it's round robin and to get first place, the person, one of them needs a submission, because otherwise if it's just, just a regular win, they won't get it because often like submissions are weighted higher. So in that case, would you be like, yeah, go out there and fake a submission basically so you get that points that how it's weighted that way and kind of gain.
So usually walkover counts as submission. So like, oh, if you just don't do the match, if you say I'm not doing it, it'll count for the same points as a submission. So
that makes typically it convenient.
Yeah, that's how I would solve that problem. But you know, I tell my guys, like, I don't really care what you want to do. If you guys are in the same bracket, like, hey, if you guys want to go out and make your own weird constraints on your round in a finals or something, like if you guys want to go out and be like, hey, listen, we're friends, we're in the finals, we don't really care who wins, we just want to go out and have some fun, like I don't give a shit if you guys want to go out and go only wrist locks are allowed this round and see what happens. It does not matter to me. Just whatever you guys want to do, agree to it. Unless there's like a team component, like I said, where it's like, you know, we can figure this out in the gym later, but for the team, we need this outcome.
Do you find it awkward even at the gym though? Because sometimes, like back in the day, sometimes we would do like mock tournament matches to get people ready. But I always felt a little uncomfortable where like, I'm not sure how they're going to take it. So I would still do it anyways. But then I kind of gravitated away from that. And I don't really like that as much nowadays. It depends on the people too, though.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. It definitely depends on the people. Some people can handle it and they're fine. And, you know, it just is what it is. But some people maybe not so cool with that. Like I do think like most things with coaching, you really just kind of have to know your students. And most of my students are pretty good. They like a good scrap. So they're usually pretty down for stuff like that.
Yeah. 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 Definitely depends on the person. I know back in the day, like when I was a white belt or a blue belt, I would have been down for it. But yeah, now like, not that I wouldn't be now, but, I don't know. I just feel like when you're younger, it's like not a big deal. You just do whatever. But as you get older, you kind of get like lazier and just like, I don't know. I don't know how to describe what I'm talking about. But
well, I hate fighting friends and teammates. I actually hate it. It brings me no joy. Like there are times where I want to do a tournament and I look at my weight class bracket and there's two guys from another gym, but guys that I'm like really friendly with or like that I really like. And, you know, maybe it's someone where I'm like, oh, I'm a little bit better than that guy or something like that, but I really like him and I want him to be able to win because I like the guy. So maybe I'll just sign up for a weight class above or something. And so I don't have to fight my friend. Cause I don't know. There's, like you said, when I was younger, I didn't care anyone, anywhere, anytime, let's do it. And now it's a little bit of like, you know, I like winning. I know winning feels good and I don't want to take that feeling away from people I like.
Yeah. I think it's like when you get older, you kind of prioritize comfort more. And when you're younger, you're just like, I don't care about being comfortable. Just do whatever, you know, it's like you get kind of, softer in a sense, or I feel softer at least. Like I feel, yeah, back in the day I would just do whatever and now I'm like super soft.
Well, can I ask you a weird question then? If you ever had to compete and there was one of your students in your bracket, would you whoop your student's ass in a tournament?
Oh yeah. I have no problem whooping my student's ass any day. Let's go.
I already talked to my students and some of them kind of asked me the same question where they're like, yo, cause like some of the tournaments out here for like, or like even the ADCC stuff just combines like purple, brown and black into one division. I'm like, there's a chance at some point that one of these guys is going to end up in my division. I basically just decided I won't do it. I'm not going to fight one of my students in a tournament. I have no desire to take that away from one of my students. And like, quite frankly, like not to be like bragging or anything, but like I've won a lot of stuff. I don't, another $2 medal is not going to make me happy. Yeah, unless my student talks shit, then they're getting a whooping.
But can you imagine if they beat you though? Like how does that go down? Like how does like the aftermath of that? I feel like that'd be pretty awkward. Like I know, you know, we try not to have egos, but egos are a real thing. Like if one of my students beat me in a tournament, I'd feel pretty shitty, that's for sure.
I'd love to say like, oh, I'd just be like super proud of them and happy for them. And like the goal as the coach isn't to always be the best in the room. It's to make my students better than me. But inside, I would definitely be contemplating retirement for sure.
Yeah, I think sometimes people pretend like ego doesn't exist or it's not normal. It's not natural. It's not fine. But like, no, like I would never want to get beat by one of my students. Like that would just, I'd feel awful. Just that's normal. But Mike, he mentioned the other day, he's been thinking about competing. And one thing that's really helping him with his confidence is doing so much like wrestling, doing like ecological style, like CLA and stuff like that, and really building confidence on the feet. Like yesterday, but even though yesterday he asked me before we rolled, he's like, you're not going to like slam me to the ground or anything like that. Mike, when have I ever done that? Or,
you know, you've never done that, but it's... like I said, I don't know if the listeners know this, but when I was younger, I got slammed by a guy and I had my neck broke. So that's a constant fear that's in the back of my mind at all times. And I know you're not going to hurt me, but I just, my OCD had to hear you say that. And even though I knew you weren't going to.
Yeah. I think it's too, like a little bit, nerve wracking a little bit, like wrestling against someone that's bigger than you and more experienced and all that kind of stuff. Like, because I am bigger than you and more experienced. So it kind of feels like, I don't know, like an uphill battle. So it's, and yeah, so I understand.
Yeah, no, it was fun though. I like starting standing up now. I never did before. I would just sit to my butt every time. But ever since we started doing these games, and it's just changed everything. I start up almost every round now and I really love it.
Yeah, I got to think of more games because I think the ones we're playing right now are really good, but it's like we need variety too. But like how many games can you really have for like stand up and like, well, unless you get like specific about like what you're doing. So maybe like you start with a single or you start with whatever, you know, you can make more specific that way. But in terms of like grip fighting, I feel like I'm having a hard time figuring out more games than I already have.
We'll talk after the podcast. I'll send you some that I got.
I appreciate it.
We got a decent list for standing now.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I mentioned this before, but I get jealous because I want to do those. You know, I want to play the games with you guys, and I want to, you know, be tired before rolling and stuff, like, you know, all sweaty and everything. But yeah, I won't complain too much. But Mike, like, do you think you will compete soon?
I'd like to maybe next year. I have a lot of work I have to do mentally before I can be able to compete, I think, and be able to represent the gym properly. But yeah, I think it's going to take me a little while, but probably in a year, I'd like to maybe do next year's Open.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's the thing. It's not just about being prepared physically. It's also just being in a good place mentally to want to compete. And, you know, me and Mike, both of us sometimes go through like rough periods mentally. And it's just hard to commit to something when you're just not feeling great.
Yeah.
You know, because when you're feeling down, it's like you don't want to do anything. And then especially when it's, you know, go compete while you're feeling down and you don't know if you're going to feel down or up during that time. So,
yeah,
because people ask me again all the time, when are you going to compete? It's like, I don't know. Like, I need to work on my own, like mental health and everything first. Because, yeah, you know, life's tough.
Yeah, that's
hard, man.
That's what I was thinking too. Like, I need time to work on myself for a little bit and then hopefully I can get in my conditioning down and my stand up will be on point and be able to do some damage.
Yeah, exactly. Are you going to do gi or no gi?
Both.
Oh, nice.
If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do both.
I'm wild man.
One thing I saw on Reddit, I found this really interesting. Someone, they're a black belt and they said they quit jiu-jitsu and they're super happy about their decision. They said like they enjoyed jiu-jitsu while it lasted, but they've kind of, I don't know, outgrown it in a way, like kind of enjoyed it while it was there, but now it's kind of just over. And I saw other black belts saying the same thing that, you know, they don't train anymore. And I've seen that in real life too. Like people got their black belts or brown belt and they stopped training. Joey, is that ever something that, goes through your head? Like, do you feel like periods of time where you're like, I've been doing jiu-jitsu so long. It's kind of not, it doesn't have that same fire in you as it used to.
I mean, I think everyone has ups and downs. I think that's hard not to avoid. I think like, I mean, we've talked about it before how like you'll have periods where you feel really good and then periods where you're down. And I think that's normal with any activity that you dedicate a lot of time to. I don't think I'd ever quit. For me, especially like obviously now it's my job. I can't quit. We're kind of stuck doing this forever. But for me,
I was just going to say, yeah, but there's like pros and cons to having it being your job. You know what I mean? Like where, I don't know, like I like jiu-jitsu and I love it and everything, but like having it be my job, especially for both like teaching at night, teaching on YouTube, everything. It's just like jiu-jitsu, jiu-jitsu, jiu-jitsu. And sometimes it is a little hard to, you know, just find the motivations. Like it can be a bad thing to make your passion your job, but it's also crappy to have your job be something you're not passionate at all about. So yeah, like it's, yeah, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, like the biggest thing, like this last week, I wasn't able to roll or do anything because I kind of got hurt on Saturday competing. So I've been, and I got to compete again tomorrow. For people who don't know, we record these usually on Fridays. So I got hurt like 6 days ago and I got to compete tomorrow. So I've been taking the week to try to like, just heal up as much as I can. Obviously I'm not going to feel perfect, but do what I can. So I haven't rolled all week and man, it's hard for me going in as the coach, knowing I can't really like partake in the practice. Like I can't roll with the guys after, and I've got a couple guys competing here and there this weekend. And like, I want to be in there helping them prep. I want to be giving them live rounds. I want to be working with them, but like, I can't do it. And if I wasn't a coach and I'm injured, it's really easy. I'll just stay home, you know, heal up. No big deal. Not getting in there, but it's really hard being like, I have to be there. I can't partake in the practice. As soon as I like the teaching instructions done, I just got to sit and watch people roll, which has value as a coach. I mean, I think every coach will agree there's value in that, but I don't know if it's like selfish or like the competitor in me, but like, I want to be partaking still. I don't want to be the John Danaher who sits and watches, and like I still want to be involved, and that's hard to be around when you can't just take the time off. Like I think that's what a lot of people don't understand about like transitioning into like a gym owner and a full-time coach is you don't get the days off, you know, like you don't get to be like, I don't feel like doing this tonight, I just won't go. If I don't feel like rolling tonight, I still have to go and sit there for the whole practice and watch, and you know, it's hard. It's hard to those nights, especially like, I don't know if you'd agree, but it's hard to make a really good practice those nights because you don't want to be there that night. I want to take a night off. I'm tired. I'm burnt out. You know, my body hurts. I just want to lay down on my couch and heal, but I got to be there and I got to try to give my best to the students. So those nights are hard.
Yeah. And I agree. I think it makes it even worse in a sense where you're already feeling like, oh, I don't want to be there or be here right now because I'm just not feeling great. And then your practice suffers because you're not doing as good of a job because you're not as like invested. Like that happens to me sometimes. Like, yeah, like last night, to be honest, I was just like not really feeling it. And I felt like I didn't deliver a good class, which made me even more frustrated. So like it can just kind of snowball. Do you think it's harder for like black belts dealing with the ups and downs, or do you think it's like harder for like the lower belts, or kind of just they all have like their own individual problems?
Yeah, they definitely all have their own problems. But like for me personally, the black belt ones have been kind of the hardest to deal with because like as a blue belt, if you have those ups and downs, like I know I'm not encouraging blue belts to do this, but like you can quit. Like if you're a blue belt and you're like, I don't love this anymore, take time off. You might come back in a year. You might come back in 6 months. You might come back in 5 years. There's no right or wrong answer. People have to do what they like, but you know, you're a blue belt. You've been training a couple of years, probably. Like it's a little bit of your life invested in this. You can take a break. It's fine. You know, but for us, it's like, man, like we've been doing this for like what, 14 years, like consistently. Like if I were to just quit jiu-jitsu, how much of my time did I spend on this activity that I don't do anymore? Like it'd be insane. Like it's so much of your life dedicated to one thing that like you almost can't walk away from it now. Or it's like, I put so much into this. Like I could have gone and become a doctor in the time it took for me to do this. Like it would feel like to me, I wasted a big chunk of my life. So I almost feel like I'm so invested in this that like I can't get out now. And I know that's maybe not the best attitude. Like a gambler is like, I've lost so much money. I'm in it now. I got to keep going. I can't stop. But that's kind of how I feel sometimes with jiu-jitsu. Now, like, don't get me wrong. I don't want people out there to think I don't love what I do. Like, I love my job. I have probably one of the greatest jobs on the planet. I get to teach people how to do the sport I love, and I really like it. But I think anyone who does what we do would say there are nights that are harder than others.
Yeah, exactly. Like exactly the same thing with me. It's like, don't get me wrong, I still love jiu-jitsu, but it's normal to have some ups and downs. But like one thing I have struggle with is like I want to do other stuff too. Like I have other, like I wanted, I don't know, like get other hobbies or whatever, like just do something else too. But because I'm doing jiu-jitsu all the time, like working on YouTube, doing the gym, I don't have time to do anything else. So it makes it hard to try to, like, I don't know, it makes it hard to explore like other areas that I might find interesting. Like I would love to make documentaries. I think that'd be so fun to do. But one thing's hard is finding a topic. That's a real difficulty in itself. But then even if I did find a topic, it'd be so hard to actually do that. So yeah, I don't know. Like I would love like a career in like making documentaries. I wish there was just more time in the day. You know, that's the problem too. Like it's just like jiu-jitsu all day, and then the day's over, and then no time to do anything else. But yeah, it's hard to complain because like it is such a great job and very rewarding. So I hate complaining because I know how good I have it.
Yeah, I mean, someone told me the other day, they're like, you know, that age old thing people say where they're like, find something you love to do or whatever, and you'll never work a day in your life. And I'm like, man, that is bullshit. Like that is nonsense. Find something you love to do and you'll enjoy the work you do every day, but you're still going to work your ass off or could be really bad at what you do. One or the other. Like I love coaching. I love my job. I love what I do. It doesn't mean I'm not working every day. I'm working, you know, people see me, I'm at the gym 3 hours a day, but I'm doing 5-6 hours at home of work, watching footage, building class plans, you know, tracking stuff, getting my own prep for competitions, you know, watching footage of my guys that we've recorded so I can help them get ready for competition. Like I work my ass off for this job. Now I love it. I love what I do. But if you think you're going to like, if people are like, oh, I'm just going to teach jiu-jitsu and then like, I won't have to do hard work. Either you're going to be a really shitty coach or you're going to learn really quickly that that is not the case.
Yeah. Like that's kind of how I felt when I started full time. It's like, I have it made now. Like I have the best job in the world. Everything's going to be easy, but no, it's like you still have some bad days for sure. And it's really interesting watching you, Joey. Not that you weren't, you know, dedicated to jiu-jitsu before, but I think you're more than ever. You're like all in now, now that you have your own gym. Whereas before you kind of take summers off for golf and stuff like that, and which is totally fine. But yeah, now you're all in. So it's a cool thing to witness as someone kind of watching from the outside, just like you're getting even more and more passionate about it, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be now. Like, I've talked to a couple of my students about this, and I don't know if I've ever said it publicly, but like the way I look at it is, these people pay me money to try to make them a better grappler. I have an ethical obligation to do the best job I can do to do that, or else I'm just robbing people of their money. Like, I could charge double what I charge, make people buy team gis and patches, and all this stuff is like, sure, I'd make more money, but that's not my job. My job is to make people better at grappling. And if I'm not doing my job, then they shouldn't be paying me. So every person who joins my gym, like, you know, I kind of had a talk with someone today. I did like a little interview. And one of the things I said was like, you know, when I first opened the gym, you always have to, like, it's always in the back of your mind, like, especially being in a big city where there are a lot of options. Why me? Why my gym? You know, there's guys who've been black belts longer. There's competitors who are maybe more successful than I am. There's gyms that have more training partners. So why me? Why would anyone choose me? And my answer is like, I care so deeply about what I do because I feel very deeply that I have an obligation to my students to do the best job I can do. And I can't take a summer off, even if I want to do other things, because then I'm not doing the best job I can do for my students. And that to me is not okay. Like, do I miss it sometimes, like where it wasn't my job and I didn't have the responsibility and I could just like, I'm going to take 2 weeks off so I can go do whatever the heck I want to do. Yeah. I mean, who doesn't want vacations every now and then? I mean, I'm sure you feel the same way. And I know you're getting closer to that point where you have people that you've trained and are at that level now where you're like, if I want to take a week, I trust that they can run this gym to a standard that I find acceptable. I trust that the class will be run well. That's obviously a goal of mine, is to get to that point where, you know, maybe I can take a week or two or a month off and I know the gym will be in good hands. But ultimately, like, I always want to come back and I always want to keep doing my job because these people trusted me with their money. So I better actually earn it, you know?
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, every class, I want everyone that's participating to come out of that class better at jiu-jitsu. So it's not just like flexing my knowledge and, you know, being like egotistical, like, yeah, look how smart I am, you know, and showing them all these cool moves or whatever. It's like, no, I want you to become better at jiu-jitsu, which is also why it's important to pick topics that are actually relevant to people and not just like teaching some like random crap that like the chances of them ever hitting it, it's like so low, which is another good thing about the ecological approach.
One of the big things I think, and like I've told my students, is if you're a coach and your goal is not to make your students a little bit better at grappling every day, like if you ask someone like, oh, you teach jiu-jitsu, what's your job? And your answer isn't to make people a little bit better at grappling every day, you're not a coach, you're a businessman. Yeah. If you think it's about making money or about growing the gym, getting a number of students, like that's all good stuff. Don't get me wrong. Like everyone should be trying to make some money and grow their gym so that you can offer this to more students. But you're a businessman if that's your primary goal. Your goal should be to make people a little bit better at this thing every single day.
Yeah. And ever since we started doing the ecological approach, I know it's been great. And Jordan said that he didn't like the class last night, or it wasn't up to his standard. He didn't feel like he delivered, but it was fantastic. Ever since we've started doing this, man, like I hate wrestling. Now I watch wrestling. I fucking watch wrestling. I hated the thought of wrestling and now I watch it to pick up pointers. I'm watching, like top level wrestlers, what are they doing? And I'm trying to use that stuff in, well, obviously I'm not that good at it. You know, I'm just starting, but I'm trying to use it in my game now. And it's kind of like when I first started, I was terrified of leg locks. If somebody grabbed my leg, I would tap just out of pure terror. And now it's the stand up. If somebody grabbed a hold of me, I would just sit down out of pure terror. I wouldn't even pull guard properly. I would just drop, but not now. Now I will actually face them and, maybe I'll get a takedown or a single leg or a double leg. I love it. I love the approach that he's taking, and I just love the direction that it's going.
Oh man, I was telling you guys, man. I'm glad you guys finally believe me and are trying it out. Because like, you know, obviously I love Limitless and I love all the people back home in Trenton. I miss you guys, and like I've been doing this for a while now, and I really see and believe. Like I wouldn't have told you guys about this stuff and like preached it if I didn't really believe in it. But like you said, like, one of the big things I've noticed is the fear is gone in students.
Yes.
Because we get to take these situations and make them smaller and safer, but still be live. Yeah. When we do scale it up, that fear is gone because I've been in there. I've, you know, maybe we started with a single in our hand. Our goal is just to put the guy's butt to the mat. We're not trying to lift him up or do big takedowns. It's, you get comfortable with these things. And then as that scales out, that fear is gone. Like, I have brand new guys who are going through, like, we're day one guys are doing takedowns. They're playing leg locks and they're not scared. They're just, this is just grappling. And we did these situations in our games. So it's that, I think it removes a lot of barriers to entry of like a, we're going to do these techniques separately, but don't use those when we roll because those are dangerous and could hurt you. It's like, hey man, we're just going to start in these situations. You're going to play, you're going to feel it. And then when we roll later, it's literally just all of these situations put together. So,
yeah,
you know, I think it's like you said, like it takes a lot of that fear away and it allows people to expand their games. But I've been getting really into wrestling too. Like I got the, I'm watching the U.S. Olympic team trials on my other monitor here during the podcast and after. Man, I've been watching hundreds of hours of wrestling footage. It's so much fun for me now.
Yeah, I've been like really enjoying wrestling lately where like even when I'm trying to think of topic ideas for content creation, it's just like I just want to do wrestling, you know, like when I'm making verticals and stuff like that's just or like YouTube shorts and whatnot. I just have wrestling on my mind. I just enjoy it so much now. Like jiu-jitsu is great, but like it's not as like new, not that like wrestling's new, but like I'm just kind of getting more and more into it, getting better at it and understanding it more and more. So it's kind of like newer and yeah, wrestling's awesome.
Yeah. Well, we just dropped a little line of merch at our gym, just like a logo with some sweaters. I got some students who really like making logos and they're pretty good at it. So every time we drop a new little piece of merch, we try and change the logo up. And we did something different this time that I thought my students would comment on or notice, and no one did. We changed it so it doesn't say Limitless Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu anymore. It says Limitless Submission Grappling. And I kind of asked one of my students, I'm like, no one commented on this. And they're like, yeah, man, like, why would we comment? We've just known that's what this is for a while now. Like, you're not, this wasn't a shocker to anyone. We knew this was coming. Because yeah. I really do think it's not Jiu-Jitsu anymore. Like, with all the content you've done and, like, all the stuff out there, it's blending these wrestling and judo techniques and even sambo techniques into what already existed with jiu-jitsu. It's not the same thing it was 20, 30 years ago. This is just submission grappling now.
I think the best way to think about it for people is like all these individual martial arts, they're almost like their own games in a sense that have their own constraints, similar to like ecological, like CLA. Like people are going to get better at what constraints they're put under. So like judo, you can't touch the legs. You can't do a lot of stuff. So they're going to get really good at doing what they're doing. And same with sambo, they like, because of their specific rule set, those are constraints. They get really good at those stuff that the stuff that incentivizes them to get good at it. Right. So submission grappling is just grappling with less constraints. And that's why there's all these different techniques pulled from different martial arts, because it's all the same stuff, just less constraints with grappling, with just like with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So that's why it doesn't make sense to really call it Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu anymore, because there's so little constraints that we can take from everything else. I think it can make sense to call Gi Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because there's the belt system, there's more rules and whatnot, but no Gi, there's way less rules and there is a belt system, but not really like, you know, in case in point of purple, brown and black being together for ADCC, and belts don't really matter in that kind of thing. So yeah, there's just different sports because they have different constraints. So I don't think it should be called Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu anymore. That's also why I didn't call my channel Jordan Teaches Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, not only because it doesn't have a great ring to it, but also because it's just jiu-jitsu. So jiu-jitsu can just be thought of as just grappling, you know?
No, 100%. I think you're really right about how the rules are just constraints on the game. Like the rules of a sport will change the best practices. But if judo, say like Olympic judo, changed the rules tomorrow to allow grabbing the legs, like, you're lying to yourself if you think everyone would just be doing the same techniques and no one would be trying to just blast double people across the mat. Like, the rules change what techniques are practical within that rule set, because it, you know, it favors, like, you have to do this. Like, there's a reason wrestlers can't play guard, and it's because you'll get pinned. Well, if you added pinning in jiu-jitsu, people wouldn't play guard either because they'll just lose. I mean, the rules change what moves make sense, what moves are good, what moves are bad. But ultimately, like in our gym, we try to train for a variety of rule sets. Like, we want to build these skills. We do wrestling rounds. We'll do jiu-jitsu rounds. Like we said, we'll use the constraints to take certain things away that you could normally do, because I want to make them good grapplers, not good jiu-jitsu athletes. I want to make you guys good at grappling. I want my, in an ideal world, I want my guys to be able to enter a wrestling tournament and do well. I want them to be able to enter a judo tournament and do well, or a sambo tournament and do well. I just want them to be able to grapple. And now, of course, they'll have to look at the rules and go, okay, what can I and can I not do for this rule set? But the rule set shouldn't matter. Like, if you're really a good grappler, the rule set does not matter.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, I want to get good at wrestling and judo because I just want to become a better grappler, you know? And I don't view those like as different sports necessarily. Like, they are, but it's just because of the constraints. And it could be a good reason why it's good to train at like at a judo gym, like do some rounds there, or a wrestling gym, because you get to train with people that deal like that are under those constraints all the time. So like, they're really good at what they do. And yeah, and then you can improve too and use it within your, within your jiu-jitsu. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things, like, I compete all the time in jiu-jitsu, but I'm trying to, if the date works out well, there's a wrestling tournament locally that has an open division. So, like not like any age can do it. I think I'm going to try it. I'm going to try a wrestling tournament and see how it goes. It might go really badly. I might lose, but that's fine. I just want to try it and see what it's like. And I think, honestly, that would be a cool little video to take, like do a little documentary series or something about, like, because you see all these things about wrestlers trying jiu-jitsu and doing well. Like, can it go the other way? You know, how well does jiu-jitsu training translate?
I think it can. And I had the same idea. I was looking for tournaments in Ontario that allowed for just anyone to sign up, but I couldn't really find anything. Maybe I didn't look hard enough, but it would be great for content. And I think it'd be a really fun thing to do. And like, I'm confident, you know, so I think I do just fine. And yeah, it'd be fun to prove to the wrestlers that, like, you know, there's some good, wrestlers within jiu-jitsu.
Well, you've trained with some pretty high level wrestlers. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've always done just fine against everyone, regardless of their credentials. And now I'm just getting better and better at it, especially from working with Joe Breeza. Like, not trying to plug the instructional, but like when I worked on that with him, like I learned so much and I used so much of what I learned from him. And I just feel like it really, ignited like a fire under me to like get better at wrestling. And, yeah, I just love it now. It just, that's my favorite part. Like, I could do just wrestling rounds for like a couple months and I'd be pretty happy. Like I wouldn't even need jiu-jitsu. I would just like, okay, let's just wrestle. Like, and yeah, it's a good time.
He's a D1 wrestler.
Joe Breeza. Yeah. He's a D1 wrestler.
I love watching his videos where he breaks down jiu-jitsu and he just tears it apart when people fuck up the wrestling. It's great. He holds nothing back.
Did you see his most recent, the most recent beef with, Placido?
No, I didn't.
Did you see that, Joey?
No.
So basically, Joe used a clip of Placido, who's Danahar's uki in all of his instructionals. So Joe used a clip of him teaching some wrestling and basically said it was wrong. And it was only like a 3-second clip, but then Placido, he made an hour long video on YouTube, trying to dismantle the argument Joe was making. And yeah, it was like an hour long, and he was pretty offended. You guys should watch it. It's interesting.
I will definitely watch that.
I mean, it is shocking though how many jiu-jitsu guys who have zero wrestling experience tell wrestlers that they're wrong about wrestling. Now, I do think there is an argument to be made that, like, just because something is correct in wrestling does not necessarily make it correct for wrestling in a jiu-jitsu rule set. There are things that we can do in our rule set that they can't. Like, I can go two hands on the head. I can lock hands around the body. I can do a lot of stuff like that. So just because something's best practice in one art, again, like, the rule set changes it. But I think, like, for the most part, like, guys like you, or like hopefully me, we'll find out, I guess, doing a wrestling tournament would do pretty well. Like, obviously there's niche things in the rules that I think would be hard, like that we don't encounter, like with the takedowns, you know, wrestling on the feet's pretty similar for both of us. Like, for wrestling, you know, get the guy to the ground is the goal. On the ground, most of it's the same. Things like leg laces, like, their leg laces really aren't a thing in jiu-jitsu. Like, I don't know. I don't think anyone's leg lacing people in jiu-jitsu competitions and rolling them around to get a tech fall. But in wrestling, like, that's something that exists. And obviously, if you're going to do a tournament, you have to, like, prep for that. Like, okay, this is something someone could do to win the match. But I think with like a little bit of adaptation, a lot of good jiu-jitsu guys' games would transfer over. I mean, look at some of the guys at the highest level now. Like, you know, Mika Galvao on the feet looks good. Like, that guy looks really good on the feet. Like, he's wrestling guys like J-Rod who have wrestling backgrounds, and he's throwing them. Like, clearly he knows something. He's doing well.
Of the styles like Greco-Roman, freestyle, folk style, which is closest to jiu-jitsu, or are none of them? Like, I know very little about wrestling.
I'd say folk style.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
And why is that? What makes it the most similar or the closest?
Well, it's a more open rule set. So Greco, you can only do upper body throws. So it just takes away so much of what you could do in jiu-jitsu. So, which is another good example of being more constraints, which that's what makes it the sport that it is. But I'm not even sure what the difference between freestyle and folk style is.
A bunch of, as far as I'm aware, and the wrestlers I've talked to, it's like a bunch of like little rules differences. Folk style, in my opinion, from what I've seen, allows for more ground wrestling, more like creative ground wrestling. At least you can get away with certain things that aren't legal in freestyle. Freestyle has its own quirks. Freestyles, for people who know nothing about Olympics, folk style is, as far as I know, just an American style. It's literally like just the American collegiate system that runs on folk style. Everything else in the world, like the Olympics, is all freestyle. And I think they have Greco as well. But so freestyle is probably the more common worldwide. But in my opinion, just from watching them, folk style is way more fun and allows for more actual like ground wrestling and diversity of ground skills.
Yeah, I would like to see a judo guy against us against a what's it called again? Like, oh my God, my mind's going blank. Against
Greco?
No, Greco. Yeah, judo Greco. Against Greco. I think that'd be really cool. Like, if they did a match against each other, one in the gi and one no gi, so it's even because they both can only do upper body throws. So I think it'd be really interesting to watch that. Like, how well could it translate? Like a Greco guy putting on a gi. He probably would get messed up by a judo guy, but maybe not, you know, maybe he would be able to get underhooks and stuff like that and just like mess them up.
Yeah. I think the grips would change a lot. Like those grips are, especially like anyone who's rolled with guys who are really proficient at judo on the feet, those grips are so prohibitive and they're, and this will be my unpopular opinion about judo. Sorry, judo guys and who are listening, you guys can roast me in the comments, but I think the grips make the game so much slower. And they really limit the diversity of attack options. Like, I know you can use them offensively, and good judo guys at a high level are really fantastic at using grips offensively. It's still exciting. But when guys don't have that level of proficiency, man, those grips are used to stall out a lot of matches.
Yeah, especially there's so much stalling with grips of like white belts in jiu-jitsu, but yeah, in judo's a little different for sure. What's really interesting watching is sometimes judo guys have like the most like unorthodox of throws and whatnot. Like it's so cool to watch. Like one just like throws one out of like nowhere, like these the weirdest grips, but they're just so used to doing what they're doing. And just like I don't know, I've seen some stuff they do and I feel like I couldn't even think to do that. Like, I don't know, it's crazy.
Speaking of judo, did you guys hear Ronda Rousey's claim lately that she is the best athlete ever?
I didn't hear that. Someone should probably check her for CTE.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Yeah, she did a big interview. She's doing a podcast tour. She was on Steve-O's podcast and a couple other ones I can't think of. And she was saying that she is the greatest athlete ever.
That's a weird thing to say about yourself.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a bold take considering you're not even the best female judoka of all time. Like a relatively niche sport in a small country, you're not even the best at that. And then to say you're the best, yeah, that is an outlandish take. Either that woman is completely delusional about her own abilities and like qualifications and accomplishments, or she's taken a little too much trauma to the brain.
Well, she was making up excuses still about losing the Holly Holmes fight. She said she went in concussed, and the Amanda Nunes fight, she said, you know, it's just luck and stuff like that. She was out on her feet before she even started, but she said she is the greatest ever.
I think though, to be a great athlete, you need to be a little bit delusional, but you also need to be like aware of what you say aloud. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because I can kind of relate with her because sometimes I get delusional in my own head. Like, you know, I can have an ego at times too. And, but I wouldn't say these things out loud, especially not on the podcast, but like, you know, like, yeah, you can't say that stuff out loud. But if you're not delusional and you don't think that like you are the best, I think it's hard to compete. And I don't know. I feel like you need that level of delusion. Like I mentioned before, like we were talking about what kind of animals we could beat, like a bear or whatever. And I 100% know that it's delusional to think that I could like, you know, kill a bear with my bare hands. But like, I'm delusional because I just think that I would be able to figure out a way to get the job done, you know? So it's a weird thing. It's like, I think some delusion can be good.
I definitely think it's helpful. I mean, you know, if you want to be the best in the world, you probably have to think that you can be. It's hard to be the best in the world if you don't think you can beat these other people. Like that would make that very difficult to do. But I also think that that same delusion that can make someone who is potentially the best in the world able to perform at that level can absolutely destroy someone who isn't that good yet. Like if you're an average blue belt and you think you're the best in the world, like sure, if you were one of the best in the world, you need that mindset. But at the same time, like you're not, man, and you're going to learn really quickly. And I think there's a lot of people who think, you know, like I'm the greatest or I'm going to be the greatest, and then they'll lose a match. And instead of like introspecting on like that's one thing, a little tangent here. That's one thing that I've noticed from like really good athletes when you listen to their interviews, when they lose, they're very introspective. They're very good at figuring out why they lost and fixing that. And I think what happens a lot with these like maybe not so skilled athletes who still have that confidence is they lose and they go, oh, I had a bad day. I got unlucky. You know, it was a lucky punch or it was a lucky takedown. I made a mistake. You know, I ate the wrong food or didn't rehydrate properly. And it's excuses for why they lost instead of the ability to go inside and go, okay, I made a mistake. I can fix that. I am still the best, but I'm not perfect. And I think those are two very different mindsets.
Exactly. I think for a lot of these high level athletes, it can almost take away their identity in a sense where they feel like they're less than the person that they lost to. Like that person's better. It's like, well, shit, you know, who am I then? Cause I thought I was the best and clearly I'm not. I think it's a hard thing to deal with someone that, that has that view of themselves.
Yeah. I mean, opposite view. I have that problem where I think I'm the worst at everything. And, that can be very taxing on the mental, your mental health as well.
Yeah, it can definitely go both ways because you experience that and I experience the opposite, which can be bad too, you know? Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, that's a problem I had for a long time. Like I was always an athlete as a kid. Like I played a lot of sports at a decently high level and I used to get really frustrated and have a bad time. And I kind of learned, I remember once I talked to like a sports psychologist and I realized that like something I was doing a lot was tying my identity to the outcome of sporting activity. Like if I lost, I wasn't a good athlete. I was never going to be good. But I'd kind of built my whole identity as like, this is what I do. I do this sport. I'm really good at this sport. So then when I lost it, I almost had like an identity crisis every time. And it became a really big deal for me. And what I learned over time, part of the reason I can compete so much now in jiu-jitsu is I understand I'm going to lose. Like if you compete enough in any sport, you are going to lose matches no matter who you are. Gordon Ryan's lost matches. He's going to lose more matches if he keeps competing. But it's that ability to separate the fact that like I can lose matches and that doesn't change who I am as a person. It doesn't make me any better or worse at grappling. These are just results. They're not the process. They're not who I am. And I've been trying to, you know, some of my students who compete, they take a loss and they get super beat up about it. And they're like, oh, I was better than that guy. And I'm like, you might've been like, it didn't work out for you on that day. We have to look back, figure out why, but just because you lost doesn't make you less of a grappler or less of a person. And you have to be able to separate those things.
Yeah. That's the problem I have for sure. But it's weird because I know logically that it doesn't like define me. It doesn't, you know, change who I am. But at the same time, like with anything, I hate losing. I just hate it so much. I'm super competitive. So like, I know logically that it's not tied to my worth, but then I still like have a hard time with it, but I'm sure that's normal.
Man, like you know, as much as I say, like I'm aware of this stuff and I get it, like it's still in the moment affects me. Like I lost a super fight this weekend. like, I'm not going to make excuses. I wouldn't do that. But like, I was having literally one of the worst feeling days of my life. Like, I had some health things going. I was having a really bad fucking day. Like, I was not having a good day. If I hadn't driven down and had a super fight, if it was just like a local tournament, I would have pulled out for sure. But I'm a man of my word. I said I'd fight this guy on this day. Screw it. I'm going to even fight. What's the worst that happens? I performed like shit. I had a shit match and I lost. All these things went wrong. I could easily tell myself like, hey, this is a different day. This is not who I am. But for 30 minutes to an hour after, I'm still in the corner just mad at myself because I didn't perform. And, you know, I know in my head that that's not logical. You're like, things happen. You're going to have a bad day. Circumstances were really poorly set up for success there. But it still hurts, man. And that's what I think a good competitor needs is you need to have that drive to win. You need to be able, when you lose, to like be affected by the outcome. You know, and as much as I tell my students, like, the outcome does not define who you are. If you, the opposite end of the spectrum is true too. If you don't care at all about the outcome, you shouldn't be competing, because why are you here? If you don't want to win, why are you doing this activity?
Exactly. Like, the fear to lose is a big motivator for me. You know, that's what gets me like fired up. Okay, I need to do what I got to do to prepare, because otherwise, because I don't want to risk losing whatsoever. Have you guys ever cried due to a loss?
I've come close. I don't think I ever have, but I've definitely had moments where I'm like, I need people to not be around me right now. I'm struggling to process this, and I just need a second. I've had those. I don't know if you have or not, but like those things where you're not crying, but you're like, if I have to interact with some people, I don't know how I'm going to handle like how my emotions are going to come out. So I just need to be alone. And I think that's, you know, it's hard, man. I get emotional about losing. It sucks. I fucking hate it.
I'm a super emotional guy. And yes, the answer is yes. Darren was there. He was coaching me at the, this is during the pandemic, and it was up in Toronto. I can't remember what tournament it was. I was having, like Joey said, I was having a shit day. Nothing was going right. And I just got fucked up in a match and literally quit halfway through. I tapped on the guy, and the guy said, are you done? I said, I'm fucking done, man. Like, I gassed out in 30 seconds, and I got up, and Darren's like, what's up? And I just, you know, I had tears in my eyes. I was just like, I fucking can't do this. Like, I just totally quit on myself. I felt bad because I quit on myself. I didn't even give myself a full chance to finish. And I fucking, that day sucked, and it stuck with me for a week or two at least. And it was horrible. I never want to feel that feeling again. It was terrible. And I was feeling sorry for myself and sad for myself. I had to get myself out of that mindset. But fuck yeah, I've definitely had a bad day for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Like, I remember, especially my first tournament, like, I didn't cry, like, you know, like sobbing, but like, yes, definitely I was holding back tears, and I needed space big time. Like, I remember that. Yeah. Yeah. That was like, oh man. Yeah. I feel almost like embarrassed a little bit because I took it so horribly, but like, man, I just wanted to win so bad. And it can be a hard thing for a coach or even like a friend to balance, like comforting someone when they might need space, or they might need that comfort. And in that situation, definitely I just needed space. I wanted to get out of there. I didn't want anyone within like 10 feet of me. It's like, I need to process this because I was so devastated.
It's hard, man. Like, it's an emotional thing. Like, I tell my students when they lose, I usually go up to them after and I go, hey, do you want to talk about it now or do you need space? And if, like, sometimes they're like, I just need a minute. I'm like, all right, when you're ready, you come to me. I'm not going to force this on you. When you're ready to talk about it, we'll talk. It'll be good. I won't be mean. Like, they know I'm not going to be a dick about it. I'm going to be polite. But like, just knowing to be like, I think this guy needs a minute of space. I think he just needs to process this for a bit. Then we can talk. Because if I talk to him now, it's not going to get through because he's hasn't processed it. And I'm the same way. Sometimes I come off a match and like one of my students will go to talk to me and I'll be like, I just need a couple minutes. We can talk about it all we want, but I need a couple minutes to deal with this first. Sometimes with wins too, like you come off and you're like, I just need a second to like bring myself back down before I'm ready to like interact with other humans.
Yeah, that's so true. Definitely. Yeah. I agree with the win too. It can feel like that. I think with like one thing I have a hard time with sometimes is kids when they lose, because I want to let them process it, you know, talk to their parents, let their parents comfort them. But then I also feel like if I don't approach them, it makes it look like I'm not I don't care, or I'm not helpful, but then I also understand they need space. So it's like a hard thing to balance and requires like emotional intelligence for sure.
Yeah. I have a, like, we don't have a lot of kids in our gym. I don't have a lot of young ones, especially, and the young ones we have, I'd prefer if they didn't compete. I got some views on that. I like to wait till kids are a little older, but we have a lot of like early teens who compete because they just do our adult classes. And it's the same thing. Like when they're done, you're like, I know they want to talk to their parent and I'm the coach. I just do the same thing every time they come off. I try and give them a hug and tell them I'm proud of them. And then we'll talk. Like, hey, that's all I can do, man. Just, hey, especially when they're emotional, like for other people who don't know, a lot of kids when they compete will cry, whether they win or lose. It doesn't seem to matter. They'll just cry. I think it's just like the emotional aspect of like, this is a very hard physical task. They're tired. They're hot. They'll just start crying. Sometimes you just got to take them and be like, pat on the back and be like, hey, it's okay. I'm proud of you. Go talk to your mom, your dad, and then we'll talk later.
Yeah. I think sometimes kids even, not fake getting hurt, but they almost like, they're so emotional, like after a loss, that they don't really know why they're so emotional. So like, oh, it's my arm that hurts or on my neck. But you, like, I saw it and like, I know they're fine, but then they start like, you know, it's almost like making an excuse, but it's totally normal. It's not talking shit about kids. Like, you know, I was a kid once and would have done this exact same thing, but like, yeah, this is a hard thing to witness. Like, cause you just know how much is going on in their mind and how hard it is to deal with.
Hey, when you think about the fact that like we're adults who've gone through this hundreds and hundreds of times and it's still so difficult for us. And then you ask, we're asking like young children to go through that same process without the experience. Like, yeah, this is going to be hard on them, man. It's like, I admire the kids who do it. I have a rule in my gym for kids who compete. The kid has to want to compete, not the parent. It can't be the parent wants the kid to compete. If the kid doesn't want to do it, they're not doing it. Or at least they're not doing it under my gym's name. I want nothing to do with that.
Yeah, that's smart. And like, you know, the way we're talking about it, it's like, you know, we have people's emotions and feelings in mind, but then there's other schools of thought like Jocko Willink, where if something bad happens, the answer is good. Like that's what, you know, that's what his whole thing is, like good, because like, how can you learn from it and get better? But I think it's not always healthy either just to kind of ignore your emotions and not acknowledge that you have emotions. And, you know, these things are very hurtful. Like, what do you guys think? Like, do you think that's a good mindset to have? Like, something bad happens, good.
I think it depends on the person, the personality. I'd say some people, yeah, and some people, no. Yeah, that's the only answer I got for that. Me, I couldn't, if it's... Yeah, you broke your leg. Good. You still got another good one. Get the fuck up and do this. No, it doesn't work with me. I need a little bit more than that.
I mean, I think like emotions and feelings and the way we react to things are there for a reason. You know, if emotions weren't biologically useful, we wouldn't have them. They're here for a reason. I think it's really important for people to look at, maybe necessarily pay attention to what they're feeling, but like ask yourself, why am I feeling the way I'm feeling? I think that's a really important question. I think to just ignore that all the time does eventually probably create problems. Like, again, I'm not like a psychologist or anything, but like, I don't think it's healthy to just constantly ignore your emotions all the time and pretend everything is good. I think that's a way to create really big problems somewhere down the road, or not build mechanisms to understand why you're feeling the way you are. And I think that's a powerful skill. I mean, you know, like when we compete, if I come off a match and I'm super upset about it, it's important for me to look inside and go, okay, why am I upset about this? I wanted to win, but I didn't. Like, that happens. I've lost before. Why is this one bothering me? And then maybe I can, I felt like maybe I didn't prepare enough and I'm upset, not because I lost, but because I felt like I could have done more to be ready for this situation. Okay, well, that's a valuable lesson. And if I just went good, well, I lose that lesson. I don't gain anything from this situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree 100%. And like, I don't claim to be, you know, this like macho guy or whatever. Like, I'm definitely like a softie, you know? So like, I think that's just fine too. I think all of us are kind of softies.
Yeah.
So yeah, but it's been an hour. It's been a good time talking about all sorts of cool stuff. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. And with that said, thanks for sticking around to the end of the podcast. We'll see you guys next time.